What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Art of Suffering podcast with Dalton Darnell. Today, once again, we have another guest I do not know from Adam. I saw some of Josh's content on TikTok and really just absolutely loved what I was seeing. The guy's just preaching the word, defending the king, and encouraging men to be men. And so I reached out to see if he wanted to come on. So let's welcome Josh Howard to the podcast. Man, welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, good to be here, man.
Yeah, so pretty much, let's kind of start with the TikTok thing, man. Have you been doing that a long time, or you just started that?
Yeah, so I started, I started really doing it probably about a year ago. Mm-hmm. So in 2021, from 2021 to 2023, I was teaching high school. I had left a church position, moved back home, and I can get into all of that. That was a wild story, but so I went from working in churches to teaching high school English at a public school, and wasn't preaching, you know, and just had all this stuff just kind of sitting around in my head. You know, I'm still going through and studying the same way I was when I was preaching and not putting the stuff out, and so I actually kind of started a Rumble account and called it 3 Minute Theologian. I'd make 3 Minute Theology videos, put them out. And then I had never had TikTok before that, but somebody told me it'd be a good idea to take little clips of that, move them over to TikTok, and then try to drive people that way. Well, then it just kind of turned into TikTok was the better place to post it all, especially mm-hmm. once they kind of went, you know, your videos got a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. and you could do a little more there. And so I did that, on and off for about a year. And then probably about a year ago, I started kind of seeing lives and a whole lot of atheist content coming across my page. And I thought, well, I could just kind of pick this up and start, you know, really hammering this out. So that's when I started, trying to post about a video a day and then do about a live a week. And now I'm kind of up to, usually kind of just a short little, you know, something biblical, a little kind mm-hmm. of a 15 second, 20 second. You know, I call it a friendly reminder or, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then usually a response video. So I, you know, have these atheist or deconstruction videos come across my page all the time.
They're
so I
usually take
one. Yeah. Usually take one and I try to stick to like arguments that are mm-hmm. made and then, you know, give the Christian side of that argument. So mm-hmm. take one, kind of chop it up, make my response to it. And then usually I try to do what I originally started doing, and that was just taking scripture, breaking it down into three, four minute chunks and throwing it out there. So I usually try to do about 3 videos a day. And then right now I'm doing about 1 to 2 lives a week, usually pretty late at night. That's a little bit harder to pull away from the family and do that right now. Mm-hmm. Usually try to get a couple of those in too.
So excuse my ignorance and everyone else is listening. So explain what a theologian is.
So in people look at it 2 different ways. In an official capacity, it would be somebody who has some kind of degree in theology. It's a little bit different from apologetics because apologetics' main focus is, basically arguments, okay. Arguments for scripture, kind of defending the faith. Okay. On the theology side, it's you kind of end up in some argumentation, but it's more preaching focused. Mm-hmm. I like theology better than apologetics because it really just assumes that God is who he says he is. And mm-hmm. I'm just going to present to you how he reveals himself to us in scripture. So on the official side, it'd be somebody who does that maybe academically or as a pastor or something like that. But R.C. Sproul had a book years ago called Everyone's a Theologian. And I actually I actually adhere to that. I think, honestly, I think even further than he did, I think all literature, movies, TV, music, I think people are doing theology all the time. Now, mm-hmm. it may be against the Lord, right? Mm-hmm. But I think every bit of content that is made and put out actually really is theological in nature. Mm-hmm. So I guess on a less formal side, theology being a theologian really is just being somebody who thinks about the divine and, mm-hmm. and kind of expounds on it in some way.
I would agree with that, dude. It's like the way John Eldridge in Wild at Heart talks about, mm-hmm. like Lord of the Rings. You know what I mean? It's like if you're a believer, basically everything you consume does one of two things. It's either like you can see Christ in it, or you can see that Christ isn't in it and he needs to be in it, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
It's funny to me, like, I watch your TikToks, and I watched several of them today. And like some of your arguments, I'm just like, dude, I'm glad this guy's fighting that fight, because I dang sure ain't going to do it. But yeah. I posted a video a couple of weeks ago where I was talking about when two believers or non-believers are married, and one of you becomes a believer. Mm-hmm. And the way that and I did this, I literally lived this. And the way that I, like, once I became a believer, the way I approached the world was not as the typical new baby Christian would, right? Like just screaming from the rooftops that everybody. And of course, I'm from the South, so I was saved. But there's a difference between being saved and walking with the King. And I'm curious to get your opinions on this. So basically what I said was that when you become a new believer, something that I do not think you should do is walk into the people who are surrounding you that are still not believers and just start condemning every single thing they do. You need to quit listening to that music because it's terrible for you. You need to quit watching those movies. And what I said in the video was that the way that I approached it was I just sat with them the same way I felt like Jesus sat with me through him pursuing me my entire life to become a warrior for him. In that you don't necessarily, you just love them through it, and you go, and then when they ask the question, why don't you sing this song with me anymore? Or why don't you really laugh at these movies anymore? So it's just not good for my heart. You know what I mean? And I had two polar opposite comments, right? There was, thank you so much, I needed to hear this because I'm struggling with this. And then there was, you're a POS that doesn't lead your family and tell everyone around you what they ought to be doing, you know? Yeah. And so I've been really fighting with that. You know what I mean? It's like, well, am I really just like a passive? Like I explain why, you know what I mean? But I have, you're talking about your wife, you know what I mean? Like you have to love her. And coming to know Christ to me is like it's a journey. It's not a moment. It's not a moment in time, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I mean, the number one thing is, you know, you can't there. And I've seen this happen before. You can't get saved and go, well, I'm going to go ahead and hop out of this thing. I mean, you married that person, right? You're in.
Yeah.
Now you've got to lead in a godly way. Somebody who mm-hmm. may not want that. Yes. And you're right. Walking in the room and going, hey, I found this. You need to get on board, or we're going to fight about it all the time. That is not going to work.
No,
I mean, and it doesn't work with anything, right? Like I love to go to the gym. I have never once pushed my wife to go to the gym. She'll mm-hmm. come to me sometimes and say, hey, I want to, you know, I think I might want to kind of start working out. You know, and I've told her, if you want to do it, that's fine. I'll help you any way I can. But that's totally on you. Because mm-hmm. if I decided I wanted to get fit and then I go to the gym a couple of times and then I come home to my wife and go, all right, we're going to the gym together, whether you like it or not. And you're going to get, you know, you're going to get in shape or whatever.
Yeah.
That's not going to work. It's not going to happen.
It's laughable. It's not going to be a good conversation by any means.
And so, you know, I think the best way to go about it, and it's going to be different from person to person, in regards to how long it takes, the kinds of conversations you end up in, different things like that. But man, I think what you do is almost exactly what you said. You stick with that person and you change. Mm-hmm. You might not sing those songs anymore, or, you know, even if it's not a wife, if it's a friend or a family member or something like that, I mean, it's okay to, to say, hey, I'm not going to stick around. You know, if the kind of music we're listening to, I'll go hang out outside, or, you know, something like that. And a lot of times those people, because they like you, they'll go, oh, no, we'll change it. And that's all that conversation needs to be for right now. You know, I do the same thing. I go to a gym where I've got some guys who are Christians. I've got some guys who know that I'm a pastor, some guys that, you know, obviously could care less. And I mean, I walk in there and sometimes the music is just absolutely, you know, it's kind of like a dungeon gym. And so he's got a little speaker in the corner, and whoever gets there first gets to hook their phone up. So you got no idea what kind of music you might be hopping into. And I mean, I'm not going to walk into that place and be like, hey guys, I'm here to work out. You got to change your music for me.
Yeah.
That's not going to work. Right. But when it's my turn, right, I put on Christian music. I've had a couple of times, guys have asked me to, you know, if I'd, cause they do have like a little kids corner, you know, so I've talked to guys about how, you know, I got to get home. My kids are at the house and all that. And they're, you know, they'll say something like, well, why don't you bring your kids? And that's my opportunity. I go, well, you know, I really don't want my kids listening to a lot of the times the music that's on in here. And most of the time they go, yeah, I get that.
Right. Yeah.
And that opens up those little conversations. And through time, man, I mean, I've been at that gym for, probably about 2 years now. And we just started last month. I've got about 8 guys. We're running a Bible study together. You know, they kind of came to me. A couple of them are saved. A couple of them aren't. And, you know, a couple of them wanted to learn the scriptures a little more. Some of them were just kind of going through some hard times, and it just worked out that way. And so, you know, yeah, if you're around people and you are Christ-like, that's gonna make a difference. A lot of times, not 100% of the time, but 99% of the time, just coming in and saying, okay, I've changed. Now you have to change, or, you know, or we're going to have problems. It just doesn't work. And so you have to build that relationship. You have to model your relationship with Christ, and then people will come along with you. They really will. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really, I guess basically my baseline philosophy is that people's salvation is the Lord's. And my job as his warrior, so to speak, is to love them.
Yeah.
Just love on them. Just be kind. Be as Christ-like as you can, and love them in the moment. And that's what I feel like Jesus did for me. There's all these little moments in my life where I can remember him, even in the deepest parts of my sin, pursuing my heart. I can pinpoint these little moments, and music is a big thing for me. Cause like the first time I really felt God like reach out to me, like, hey man, I love you. Even though you know what you are, I love you. And, there's this song by Third Day called I've Always Loved You. And I was flunking out of college and I had a final. And I had to pass this final. I had to make like a 65 on it to continue with my schooling. And I woke up late for the final because I'd been drinking the night before. And I ran out of my trailer that I was living in. I ran out and I jumped in my truck. And it was my granddad's truck. He's let me borrow. And it had one of them 6-disc CD players in the glove box. You know what I'm talking about? It was a 99. Thing was sweet. Anyway. So I jump in the truck and I always use the aux cord Like I had an aux cord in it and I cranked it up and I had like 4 minutes to get to class and I was 30 minutes from the school. I knew there was no way.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, that daggum CD player turned on instead of my aux cord and it was playing I've Always Loved You by Third Day.
And that's still the best album they ever did, by the way.
Oh, and no question.
Offerings, no question. Best album. I think best album in Christian music, but the best one they ever did.
It, dude, I sat and I wept in that truck like a child. Mm-hmm. And it still took me like 3 years after that. But I knew, man, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so those little moments in time where you really feel God kind of pursue you as a man, you know, like, gosh, I am living just like, there's just a point, I call it coming to the end of yourself, where you're like, I am just a piece of freaking garbage, man. Like, why do I feel like crap all the time? Well, there's a hole in your heart.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
There's only one thing that fits in there. And so anyway, Josh, tell me a little bit about how you grew up, man. Where are you from? Like, where'd you grow up?
Yeah, so I grew up in on the west coast of Florida. Manatee County is the area. It's near Sarasota, kind of north of Fort Myers, south of Tampa, that area there. And I grew up in just a great home, you know, Christian parents, Christian grandparents on my mom's side. I mean, and phenomenal Christian grandparents on my mom's side. My dad's side was a little bit rougher. He had a really tough time growing up. A lot of them have come around and accepted the Lord, and things have changed over the years. That comes from the way my dad's done the same thing, right? Lived out his faith in front of them. Mm-hmm. I kind of had a glimpse of that part of the world. But then I was steeped in, Christ likeness and following Christ with my parents and my grandparents on my mom's side. And, most of my family on that side. And so I was about 5 years old when I accepted Christ. I remember, just going through a Sunday school class, King's Kids is what they call us, going through Sunday school one day. And it really was just. A little gospel presentation, and it made sense that I was sinful. I knew, I'd lied to my parents and done things like that. I was like, okay, I can handle that. And then, you need salvation. I was like, well, that makes sense. You're sinful, you need salvation. And so they walked us through that. And so that night, I went to my parents and said I wanted to accept Christ, and prayed the prayer there. I was baptized about a year later when I was six. And I remember one specific thing. It was in between those two. I was still probably about 5 years old. But I don't know if you remember who Jeff Slaughter is, but he was the Vacation Bible School song guy. He wrote all the music for Vacation Bible School the whole time. Really? I was growing up. Oh yeah. He was like a huge celebrity for us, man. And he wrote kids music, kids Christian mm-hmm. music. And super cool guy. Well, the church I grew up in until I was 10, had a really good relationship with him. And so he'd come through and do concerts every once in a while. And he did, worship music and stuff like that too. Just the kids music was kind of his main thing. But he came and did a concert for the church. And in the middle of the concert, he asked if anybody had a scripture or a testimony they wanted to share. Well, I was 5 years old, and I believe I'd gotten a birthday card from my grandma. I might have just turned six, but I got a birthday card from my great grandma, and on the back of it was a little lamb, and it said, I forget the reference, but behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world, right? So I stood up in my chair and I read that off of the card, and it was neat. He called me up on stage and he got down. And he looked at me and he said, the Lord has a very special plan for your life. And he's got a purpose, in ministry for you. And that was it. That's all that's kind of the part of it I remember. But I would say that was my first kind of inkling to a call to ministry, which, you know, obviously I completely forgot about that. Kept moving on. You know, went through middle school, high school. And I would say, really kind of took on my own faith. So went from, you know, the faith my parents taught me to, really diving into it, understanding it, making it my own when I was probably about 14, 15 years old. You know, and I wasn't perfect by any means. I had all kinds of issues I was, you know, I was dealing with, but, that was when I started really just leaning into trying to understand the Lord more. And so I had a group of friends. We had a small church, kind of a dysfunctional church, just a lot of like miniature splits and things like that that happened through the years. Our youth group never really grew. We didn't have a youth pastor. We just kind of had adults that would kind of take over from time to time. So we almost kind of really had to not self-teach, but we really had to lean in and go to church services together, go to worship concerts together, you know, do Bible studies together. If we wanted that kind of stuff, we had to make it happen. And so I had a good group by the time I was about 16, that we were kind of doing that. And then our church went through kind of a big upheaval. A couple of the leaders who were leading youth group, man and woman, had an affair together. It blew up a lot of things. A lot of people left the church, and we were kind of left in youth group just without anybody to come in and take over. And so that was when I started preaching. So we got the keys to the youth room, and we would show up on Wednesdays, open up the youth room. We turn on the lights. We get the sound working. I had a couple of friends who would lead worship, two buddies that would run the sound and the lights and all that kind of stuff. I would preach. I mean, we ran the youth group for about a year. And so that was when I started preaching, and it was probably about 2 or 3 months into that the Lord really went, this is what you're supposed to do. And so I preached a good bit, even when we had adults come in and kind of take over again. You know, I'd preach from time to time, or I would lead our Bible club at school sometimes, or I just found different places. I found myself preaching and teaching and leading Bible studies. But the one thing I knew, I mean, from the time I was little, was that I didn't want to go to college. I had no desire to go to college. I hated school. From the time I was in middle school, I hated school, all the way through graduating. And so that was the direction the Lord was leading me to go, was to go and get my degree in ministry. I knew it. I mean, I had confirmations on it. I knew that was the direction he was taking me, and I decided I wasn't going to do it. And so I got out of high school. I went to fire school first. So I went to firefighting school. Turn that off. But I went to firefighting school. I got through fire one and started fire two. And I loved every aspect of it. I mean, the physical aspect, you know, it was a blast. It was a great group of guys that I was in school with. But I was going home every day just feeling completely empty. I wasn't happy, right? And I knew I should have been happy because I liked the work, but I couldn't make myself feel happy being there. And so, so I left there. I tried to join the Army, and I got rejected there. I had asthma when I was little. This was back in 2012. That I was trying to join. And so they were really cutting things back, and they found the asthma in some medical records, and just kind of, they didn't tell me I couldn't join, but they basically just like stopped calling. So I gave up on that, and got a job at a nuclear power plant in Crystal River, Florida.
Bro, you're Jonah.
Yeah. No joke. It gets worse, man. It gets worse. So I'm working at a nuclear power plant. making 22, 23 bucks an hour, 18 years old, buying new guns, living in my own house. I mean, just, again, should have been, I mean, the work was easy. Like they would, mm-hmm. working in a nuclear power plant, they would rather you not work than, than maybe screw get hurt somebody. Doing something. It was the easiest job you could think of for the money that I was making. And the opportunities were huge, right? You could go into electrical and just make bank if you were in nuclear. So, you know, there was just all kinds of stuff that again, should have been a phenomenal job. I should have been happy. And I just wasn't. Mm-hmm. Same thing. I just wasn't happy. So I was going to just suck it up and not be happy. But they ended up, the nuclear plant ended up getting bought out and shut down. And so I lost that job mm-hmm. after about 4 months. So they shut the nuke plant down. It took years to actually finally get everything finished up, but they've completely shut it down now. So I moved on from there, went to the Navy recruiter's office. They did the same thing to me. They found it all a little quicker. So I kind of walked in, they looked at my records and said, no, we're not going to take you. So I walked out of there, drove back home, moved back into my parents' house, took a job doing plumbing. And I did that for about 2 weeks, until the first time we had to rot a sewer, I said, I'm out. I can't do this one. And I landed in electrical work. So I did electrical work for about a year and a half, new construction. Mm-hmm. I was on a big mall job. We were doing all the underground at the time, on a mall at University Town Center in Sarasota. And at the time it was the second biggest, new construction project in the country, next to the World Trade Center, the new World Trade Center.
Good.
So, I mean, it was huge, man. I mean, we were just, you know, it was a neat job. And that was the time period where I knew I was running from what the Lord was calling me to do. And I started running from the Lord as well. So I was already running from what I knew he wanted me to do. Now I'm starting to really run from him. I'm not reading. I'm going out and putting myself in situations that, you know, that I really shouldn't be in. That I normally wouldn't put myself in. Not doing anything bad, but, you know, toeing the line on a lot of those things. And so through that period of time, that lasted about a year and a half. Through that period of time, what actually happened to me was I developed this sense of pride. I wasn't following the Lord anymore, really. But, you know, I'd never had sex. I didn't drink. I never smoked. You know, I had all these things that still made me the good Christian kid mm-hmm. without the desperation for Jesus, which is what I really ended up landing on. Later on. And so over the course of about a year and a half, all of those boxes that I had made my faith about, because I'm still going to church. Like if I'm living in my parents' house, I'm going to church, right? So I'm still going to church. I'm still, still playing the part, just running from the Lord and still preaching sometimes, even when I'm asked to. And over the course of about a year and a half, those boxes started coming unchecked. The not drinking, the not, you know, the, all the things that I was proud of that I had never done all started to come unchecked. And the last one that came unchecked, I was always really proud. I wore the purity ring in high school. You know, I got made fun of for being a virgin, all that kind of stuff. And I was very proud of it. That was the last box to come unchecked. Mm-hmm. It was a blackout drunk night. I don't remember it, or at least most parts of it. It was like, I mean, it was rock bottom, you know. Mm-hmm. At least for me, because again, in my head, like this is what made me a good Christian kid. And so now all of that stuff is gone, and I was on my 20th birthday, still living in my parents' house, still doing electrical work. Me and a buddy had gone out. We had found a guy at a gas station who would buy us beer. We sat out, and I got through about half of one. And I just said, listen, man, I don't know if I'm done or not. I don't know if next weekend this is going to look exactly the same. I don't know what's going to happen, but right now I just can't. I can't sit mm-hmm. here. So it's my 20th birthday. I'm sitting there like that. I went home, and this was the prayer I prayed. I laid in my bed, and I prayed, Lord, you're either going to have to change my heart, because I want to, and I've tried to, but I can't. I just can't do it. And I know if it's left up to me, I'm not going to change. And so I said, Lord, you're either going to have to change my heart, or, and this was genuine, or you're going to have to let me go. Now, you know, I know the once saved, always saved, and all that kind of stuff comes up, but I was genuinely praying, Lord, if you're not going to change my heart, you're going to have to completely take away the conviction. You're going to have to completely take away the Holy Spirit. You're going to have to completely remove yourself from me, because I can't have both going on at the same time. And if you're not going to change me, if you're not going to change me, I already know I'm not going to change myself. And so I don't even want to. Well, about 8 months before that, I had signed up to go as a chaperone to youth camp with our youth group. And that was back before all the real heavy stuff started. So, I was still kind of hanging on to that stuff then. And so that was 3 days after my birthday that we left. So I prayed that prayer that night. We pack up and we go to youth camp 3 days later. And you got to remember, I'm still, all the old ladies in church love me. My parents have no idea what's going on, you know, what I'm doing. I'm still preaching sometimes, like I said, when I'm asked to in youth group, I'm still leading Bible studies with people. All of that was happening at the time. So nobody really knew, minus very, very few people, what all was happening. And nobody knew I had prayed that prayer. Mm-hmm. And so we pack up, we go to camp. And it was the third night of camp, the camp pastor gets up on stage. And I don't even remember the sermon. I don't know what passage he preached, none of it. I remember he got on stage, he looked out, and he started his sermon with, your reputation cannot save you. And then he launched into the sermon about how you can check all the boxes you want to. That's not going to save you. It's all about a desperation for Jesus Christ. And I just broke down. That was it. I realized what was going on. I realized that I was running from what the Lord had called me to do. I had three people throughout that week tell me that I needed to be in ministry. People I didn't know. These were people from, chaperones from other churches, from all across the country, just walk up to me, ask me a question, and then say something like, well, you need to be preaching, or you need to be, in ministry. And so went home from that week. And I prayed, because I was making a good bit of money. I was working for a pretty prestigious electrical company. I was in line to, climb the ladder pretty well. I mean, they had plenty of opportunity. And I said, Lord, you're going to have to show me that I need to leave. And so I pulled up to work the next morning. And the stuff that the guys at work were talking about standing at the van, it was usually pretty vulgar, just mm-hmm. construction zone kind of talk. But this time it was almost like it was too much. And so I heard that. I went on my lunch break. I called the college I ended up going to, the Baptist College of Florida. I was 2 weeks from the start of the semester, and I was past the deadline to apply. But when I got out of high school, I had applied to the school and gotten accepted, and then decided not to go. So I called them. I said, hey, I really want to come this semester. Is there any openings left? And they said, well, actually, we have your acceptance right here. It never went away. And so they accepted me. I quit my job, 2 weeks later, I was headed up to school, starting the semester. That's where I met my wife. We got up there, got in with a church pretty shortly after we got married. Been preaching now for about 12 years in youth ministry and a couple other different capacities. And it's just been, it's been hard. There's a lot of difficulty in it, and I'll talk about some of that too. But I have never once felt that feeling of just emptiness and purposelessness ever again. Not since stepping in. So the Lord really, it was a Jonah story for sure.
Jonah.
And Jonah just needed one storm, man. The Lord was just telling me over and over again, like, this isn't where you're supposed to be. And I would just be like, well, I'm not going. I don't care what you say. And it took about 4 years to really buckle in. But he's been good. He's been good through that, and he's been good ever since.
So that's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Honestly, I'll just be candid. So I did a podcast. So there's a podcast on here where I talk about the church and the struggles I have with the church. And I do not go to church. My granddad was a preacher, and that was the last church I attended regularly, after he died. And I went on another guy's podcast. It's called the Working Cows podcast or something. And I didn't know this dude. It's a cowboy podcast. We sell ropes. And dude was, I thought it was a cowboy podcast. So I go on to talk about cowboy and end up, of course, we start talking about Jesus, cause that's just how it rolls. And then, comes out, he's a pastor, but before he told me he's a pastor, he was like, what do you think about the church? And I was like, man, I got a hard time with it, you know? And one of the biggest reasons why I reached out to you is because you are a pastor that is walking in the world. You are living your stuff on probably top 10 most vulgar apps that a child can download on earth.
Yeah.
And you are out there living it. And that is freaking rare, dude. Cause I'm rough. Like, I'm a rough guy. Like, I cuss, and I've talked about my drinking troubles on here quite a bit. And God has absolutely, like, this week literally annihilated me in that regard. I started getting into fasting and literally burying the flesh, dude. Like going into battle and killing that sucker and burying him in the ground. It's been just one of the most life-changing things I've ever experienced. But anyway, I have just so much respect for the believer that is willing to walk into the world and be with sinners. You know what I mean? Like, and not be in the world, but not of the world, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to have a worship pastor at the first church we were on staff at. And he used to say church, a lot of churches are a cruise ship when they're supposed to be a battleship. I think that happens a lot. You get in this building, you're comfortable with these people, and you feel like, well, you know, as long as we're doing okay, and you know, one or two people come in every once in a while, but we're happy with each other, then we're doing church. And that really is. So that's a very big part of the reason I just left the church I left. And that was a really tough decision to make. And I still don't know, what direction we're going or why in the world the Lord did this to. I say did this to us. I'm not upset with him anymore, but why he allowed us to end up in this position. That really was why we left. I looked around and I realized the ministry philosophy here is all about building our castle. and it's not about building the kingdom. And the Lord finally took me to the point where I said, I have to leave. I can't stay any longer. So I see it. I understand people having issues with the church, because I would say very much of the American church right now is so either just watered down or just so outside of Jesus's ministry philosophy. It brings up problems, and I understand why people have a hard time with the church. I always view the church as it should be, as very similar to a gym. You know, you walk into a gym, and especially, you know, you walk in, not like a Planet Fitness, but you walk into a gym, right? And this is a place where everybody there has one goal in mind. I want to get bigger. Right?
Yeah.
I want to get stronger, or I want to get slimmer, but I want to make gains in some way. I mean, that really is, whatever it is, I'm here. When I walk through these doors, the only thing I care about is, you know, picking up heavy stuff, putting it down, and getting one step closer to what it is I have in mind. And so you walk into a gym and you can find a spotter who's going to be stronger than you. And he's going to, you know, some of them, you know, he's going to smack you on the back, and he's going to yell at you to get it up. And he's going to, I mean, the gym I'm working out in now, man, if you're going for a PR, the whole gym stops. Everybody turns around. And this happens all over. I mean, like 3 or 4 times during one of your workouts, this is happening. The whole gym stops and just starts screaming at somebody. And everybody's yelling. He picks it up, slams the weights back down, you know, throws his belt off. I mean, everybody is locked in to that guy's progress or that girl's progress, because everybody's there for the same reason. And so you're bumping elbows with people. You're sweating it out with people. You are training alongside other people because everybody there has the same goal. That really is what church should look like. When we show up to this place, I mean, we're hitting it hard, right? It's about learning scriptures, but it's not just about learning scriptures so that I can walk into this place, because I don't want to just walk into the gym and have everybody else in the gym know who I am and tell me you're looking good, or you're looking bigger, or you're looking swole, or whatever. I want to be able to take that stuff out to other people. Right. I want to be able to play with my kids longer. I want to be able to protect my family. I mean, these are the things that I'm thinking about when I'm in there. So it's not just about showing up to the gym and being in a place where I'm comfortable, like a no judgment zone kind of thing. You know, it's I'm here to grow so that I can take these skills out into the world and do something with them. And that's exactly what churches should look like. We're here. We're going to go to battle together. We're going to fight together. We're going to lift and wrestle with these tough passages of scripture. We're going to see what Jesus had to say and how we can apply it to our lives, but we're going to do it in here so that we're better equipped to take it out there. And that's what church really needs to look like. And I would be willing to say that 85% of churches in our country today don't have that mindset.
No, they don't. It's, I always say all the time, people don't hate Christ, people hate Christians. Because, I mean, they're tough, dude. It's hard, man. And, like, I truly believe that's why I prefer to be around sinners sometimes. It's like, dang it, man. Like, you see sinners acting more Christ-like than Christians do, and it's tough for me to sit there. Like, I don't have a problem standing with a brother in Christ and looking him in the eyes and saying, you are freaking wrong.
Yeah.
And I don't do that to sinners. I just love them. I'm like, man, it's, I love you. You know, now if they ask my opinion, you know, of something that's just blatant, that's a totally different conversation. But what I'm saying is, like, the kid that works for me listens to rap music at work.
Yeah.
And I don't say, I'm just like, Now he asked me, he's like, Mr. Dalton, do you like this song? I'm like, no, it's terrible. Yeah. It's the worst song I've ever heard. Yeah. Like, that's not even good music. I don't care what they're singing about.
My dad, I went through the rap phase. My dad used to say you can't spell rap without the C. He'd get all high and mighty about it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
And he, you know, but the same person that would not stand there and listen to that, so you need to turn that garbage off. It's bad for your soul, yada, yada, yada. That same 18-year-old kid is going to respond to that in a, you man, what? You know? Yeah. And that's not how I want our relationship to be, right? And me and him talk about Jesus probably every single day. You know what I mean? Not that he knows the King, but he will. Yeah. If he's on my path, he's going to, I mean, you can't stand around me for very long without me going, I can't do this without Jesus. And so it's just, that's interesting to me. And I just, man, I have so much respect for what you're doing as far as battling the enemy out there on the line, you know. I talk about that a lot, about being a warrior and actually being in the freaking world, man. Like, that's where the people are that need it. And not that you don't take it to a church house. And I just have such a hard time with surface. I'm a lot, dude. I'm the most.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I get it, man.
We do a small group on Tuesday nights here where a bunch of men come. And I say a bunch. There's like, you know, 7 to 10 of us a week. And we don't really do a Bible study, so to speak. It's just more or less sharing hearts and burdens. And then we talk about scripture that might apply. And man, it's just being in the trench with those guys that fills me up. I'm just like, man, I told them week one, man, and I'll just be as honest as the day is long. I sat down in that chair and nobody really knew what was coming, you know? And some are believers, some are not, all are broken. And I said, guys, I said, every single one of you guys sitting in this room is f***ed up. And if you tell me you're not, you're a fucking liar. So let's get after it. I mean, week one, day one, and then the mass, all of them said, bink. And all them guys are just like, we're broken, man. We're freaking broken. And it's so hard. And I have such a hard time building relationships without that. And it'll spook a guy. You know what I mean? Like, it'll spook a guy off of you.
Well, that's what, I mean, there's nobody who's not. And we try to pretend so much that there's this level that you can get to that you just don't feel broken anymore. And that's not the way it works, man. We're broken people that are always going to be broken. And the best we can do is wrestle with that together. But the wrestling with it together is, I mean, it's tough. You end up having to call people out. You end up getting called out by people. I mean, you know, it takes a level of, I mean, just friction and uncomfortability, and that friction and that uncomfortability never go away. That's the problem. That's the rub, right? Because I think we expect, I mean, you know, you look at how people look at therapy. Well, I'm supposed to go in here and then, you know, within 6 months or a year, whatever it is, I'm supposed to be this person. Then what ends up happening is, okay, you get over these things, and especially if the Holy Spirit's part of it, now that conviction starts going, great, you got over this hill, let's go tackle this one. Oh, and by the way, there's 87,000 other hills on the other side of that one.
Right.
So, you know,
right.
And it just is over and over again, chipping away at who God has called you to be. And the reality is, you're not going to be that person until Christ comes back or he takes you home to be with him. And I think so often we expect, well, I'm going to get in the guys group for the next 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 9 months or whatever. And by the end of it, I'll be rock solid. Man, I'm not going to need to go, you know, I'm not going to need to go train anymore for quite some time. No, it never ends. It does not end. And I think that's the rub, is where we as we as guys feel like, well, I should be able to do A, B, and C and get all the results I'm looking for, because that's the way a lot of things work. It doesn't work like that with spirituality. It's a constant fight. It's a constant battle. And man, when you can find those guys who treat going to the scriptures, who treat going to church, who treat going to Bible study as just training, as going to war together. I mean, Jesus said, you know, he said there's nobody in the entire earth that's as good as John the Baptist. He's the men of men, right? But even the least in the kingdom of heaven will be greater than he is. From the time of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven has suffered violence. And he's actually referring back to Elijah, because John the Baptist was kind of this viewed as this continuation of Elijah. So he's referring back to the Old Testament. It says the kingdom of heaven has allowed for or suffered violence, but the violent are the ones who take it by force. And that idea of spiritual violence that he's getting into is just this tunnel visioned, I'm going to get through that brick wall no matter what happens, no matter how many times I got to beat my head against it, no matter how many guys we have to throw at it, we're going to get to the other side of that thing. That kind of spiritual violence is what it takes to really make it in this life spiritually. And I don't mean make it. I mean, your life might not look exactly the way that the world thinks it's supposed to, right? Mm-hmm. You might not ever be wealthy. You might not ever own a house. You might not have all these measures of success that even Christians a lot of times try to think, okay, if somebody's really following Christ, here's the things that they're going to have. You may have none of it. But man, if you are violently after Jesus Christ, I mean, just spiritual violence on a daily basis, I'm not talking about beating people. I'm talking about being passionate about growing closer to Jesus. Yes. If you're on that, and you have none of that other measure of success, but that's what you have, then you have everything that you could possibly need in this life. And I guarantee you, people are going to follow you. Guaranteed. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've seen, what movie was it? There was a war movie not too long ago. It might have been one of the Kingsman movies. But this guy's in the trenches, right, in World War II. And everybody's scared. They're freaked out. They're hunched down. And all of a sudden, this one guy just gets out and he starts running, crossing no man's land. And I mean, you can see it in his eyes. He's just like, I'm tired of this. Whether I die or not, I'm getting to the other side over there. And all of a sudden, all these other dudes look around and they're like, let's go. And now you've got 400 dudes running across this field. And the other guys on the other side are going, oh, we didn't sign up for this. Right. That's what that looks like. So I guarantee you, man, if you're locked in like that and you're running after Jesus, just violently, ferociously going after the Lord, men are going to follow. And then they're going to pass you. That's the cool thing, man. That's one of the coolest things that you can see happen when you're chasing the Lord. And all of a sudden this guy who has been following you and he's inspired by you and he's stepped in and all of a sudden, like, he's doing better than you are. That's one of the most awesome feelings that you can possibly get in ministry and work and whatever it may be. And following the Lord, man, when you see those people just come by and you're like, well, man, I've been doing this for a long time and you're killing it, dude. That's one of the coolest things in the world. It's a neat.
Man,
it's a
neat. Awesome. It's, I got a buddy of mine. His name's Daryl. I had a episode with him, but I always look at it like, I get knocked down. And he drags me up and we keep going. And then he gets knocked down. And I drag him up. And this is like every 15 minutes of the day, you know?
Yeah. So oh, absolutely.
At one point I'm piled up on the ground and then he's got to pick me up and keep me going. And it's vice versa. And, you have to have it. You just have to, it's for me, I've been walking the road alone for a long time. And this podcast has been one of those things where, the enemy had kind of left me alone for a really long time. And, and when I started this thing, buddy, I'm talking about cold blooded warfare up in here. Yeah. It's been rough and
I would say the same thing about my TikTok channel and what's come out of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's very
real. It's brutal. Yeah. Like literally this week, you know, in the fasting and the, all the things that, that we're doing to seek the King, like I wanted to get off of the pressure so bad. I was like, I just need to quit the podcast. I like, if the enemy will leave me alone, I'll quit. Like, just please. And God was like, never weaken, dude. Like, yeah. Let's go. I'm here. I am here with you. I am here to bring you along. This is the point. The point is that you can't do it. That's what you're supposed to be saying, is that you can't do it. It's me. And yeah. It's been like a week full of that, just weeping and just brutal. And I mean, so you've had that with, you've experienced that as well with the TikTok stuff.
Yeah. Partially because of the work that's coming in with the TikTok. And I think the reach that I'm starting to kind of have, and the influence I've been able to kind of see with people. I think that's probably right around the time that the spiritual warfare really started. I would say I've been in a time, I call it the narrows. And I got that from a pastor buddy of mine. That's what he calls it. But he says the narrows is where you go to die, right? The Lord has mm-hmm. something in you that he wants to kill. And so mm-hmm. he takes you into these narrows. And I'm stiff-necked. I'm hard-headed. And so I usually end up in the narrows a little bit longer than some other people do. But it started for me in about 2021. I had just started, I wasn't doing TikTok yet, but I was doing kind of podcasting and getting some other things out there. But I was doing it on deconstruction. So I had discovered Rhett and Link, their deconstruction stories. And these were guys that podcasters that my students, you know, kind of listened to and looked up to. And so they came out with their deconstruction stories. Well, I really started going hard after the deconstruction stuff. And, I probably went through a couple hundred hours of podcast episodes, multiple hour long conversations with people who were teaching deconstruction and trying to pull people out of the church. And I was writing kind of a book, kind of a paper on the subject. And, I was really starting to gain some, I don't know if recognition would be the right word, but I was starting to reach people who, mm-hmm. who were in this deconstruction thing. And right about then I had been praying, cause I went to college. I knew the Lord wanted me in ministry, but I always wanted to be in full-time ministry. And mm-hmm. so I'm studying this deconstruction stuff. I'm working with my students. I'm working for a church part-time. And then I was doing personal training and cutting grass for two different companies. So I basically was working four jobs. I was beat down. I just had a kid. COVID had happened, all of that. And I'm sitting there praying to the Lord. And I just, I said, Lord, I want to be in full-time ministry. Like I want to be doing this full-time. I don't want to be out here cutting grass when I can be, counseling, when I can be talking to people, when I can be teaching people in Bible studies. And the Lord said to me, I remember it vividly. He said, look, if you want to be in full-time ministry, just do it. Let me take care of the money. Yeah. And so I did. I quit my other jobs. I was still paid part-time by the church, but I worked full-time. And what I started doing, we had students in eight different schools around the area. So every weekday morning, I would be at a different school praying around the flagpole with some of our students. That started to grow. Other kids started coming in. Our youth group started growing. We went from about running about 10 to 15 to about 40. On a Wednesday night, three students that we'd been praying over for a couple of years accepted Christ. It was just, everything started to blow up. And I'm sitting here thinking, all right, Lord, I stepped in. Here's what I did wrong. I stepped out on faith. And so now I'm seeing the blessings because I stepped out on faith. Mm-hmm. And July 2021, that was about 8 months, 8 months of working full time on a part time salary. The Lord was taking care of our bills. I mean, it was just amazing things happening. And in July 2021, my dad got COVID. He went into the hospital in July, I think July 7th. He didn't step out of the hospital until the end of September. He was on a ventilator for 25 days. I think he was in the hospital for 60 days overall.
He went on the vent and made it?
Made it, and he's doing great. He's a firefighter. He's been back to work. I mean, he was back to work within about 6 months.
That was rare, dude. Like, my wife was an ICU nurse during COVID.
Yeah, he was supposed to die.
You hit the vent. She was like, if they get on the vent, it's over.
Mm-hmm. And that's another miracle. I really think a lot of people died of loneliness because the doctors called my mom. We had already moved back home at this point. Doctors called my mom and basically said, hey, we've done everything we can do. The best we can do is leave him on the vent. I hope he wakes up. And my brother and sister both happened to work for the hospital. But they hadn't been able to go in and see him. They were even keeping nurses out of his room. And because they thought he was dying, they let my brother and sister start kind of going in shifts and sitting with him. And he was off the vent within a week and out of the hospital within 3 weeks.
That's insane.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people's loneliness is what killed them. But that was so that happened. So in the middle of that, my parents had adopted a young girl probably about 4 years before. She lost her mind. While my dad was in the hospital, she started running away, wanting to fight my mom, ended up in a home, and she ended up out of their home completely. Never would come back. She just, she lost her mind. So my mom was dealing with that by herself. So my wife and I are down, and, you know, we kind of looked at each other one day and said, we've got to move back to Florida. We were in a great church. Like I said, that church in Georgia, man, everything was blowing up. The church was great. It was family oriented. When we go back to Georgia, we still go there for Sunday morning service. I mean, and they treat us just like we're still the youth pastor there. They're awesome. And I called my pastor and I said, hey, we have to move. We got to go back to Florida. And he said, okay, now you don't leave a church without somebody being upset with you. As a staff, it just doesn't happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have one single person, not one in the entire church, three to 400 members, not one person said anything bad. They paid me for 3 months after we left. And when the day we left, they handed me and my wife an envelope with $4,000 in it.
Good. Nice.
They were that kind of church. And so we moved back to Florida. I took a job teaching high school. And I just felt like the Lord had left me. I mean, I had stepped out on faith like he told me to. He had been taking care of things, and all of a sudden he just rips this out from under my feet. And now I'm in a public high school. I'm not supposed to talk about God in the classroom. I'm teaching English. I'm sitting there thinking, did I do something wrong? What happened? And, the first year of teaching, I pushed a little bit, you know, I was a Christian and the kids knew it. And so, you know, if they asked a question, I'd talk about it. I didn't push anything too hard, but, I lived out my faith in the classroom a lot, like what you're talking about. And it was really good. But the second year, I said, all right. I said, Lord, you got me in this place. You gave me this job. I mean, it was a miracle how I got the job so fast. I mean, it really was. And so I said, Lord, you gave me this job. So I'm going to give you my classroom. And if you don't want me to be fired, I won't be fired. And if you do, then I'm not going to stay here anyways. And so second year of teaching, it was a writing class. I had juniors and seniors. I gave away 16 Bibles. And that was all students asking for, coming to me and asking me. They said they wanted. So my dad was better by that time. I had a kid come ask one day, you know, if they could have a Bible. I'm like, absolutely, I'll go buy you one. So called my dad. I said, hey, I need to find a Bible. And he hopped on Lifeway, found some really nice study Bibles for like $13. They were on sale. So he bought like 30 of them and just gave them to me. So I stacked them up in my classroom. I ended up giving away like 16. We went through Billy Budd by Herman Melville, which is it's an allegory of the Gospel of John and the Book of Acts. And so I got to teach the Gospel of John and the Book of Acts in my classroom. We went through C.S. Lewis's Abolition of Man, René Descartes' Discourse on Method, which is, he decided he was going to get rid of all of his presuppositions and just work his way from nothing to whatever the truth was. And the premise of the book is there is no doubt that the God of the Bible is the God of the universe and that he is in complete and total control. So we went through that as a class. We read the book of Ecclesiastes. We read the book of Ecclesiastes as a class. And I'm sitting there one day, and I'm like, these kids don't want to hear this stuff anymore. So we were finishing it up, and I thought, you know, I'm gonna do something else today. And so I wrote a different lesson plan on the board. And the kids walk in and they go, I thought we were finishing Ecclesiastes today. And I was like, you guys want to do that? And they're like, yeah, every single one of them. I mean, they ate it up. They loved it. Never wrote a single referral in that class. I had six classes. Never wrote a single referral, never had a single parent complaint, never had a bad review. I ended up with the highest test scores in the entire school.
What?
I mean, it was just the Lord was working like crazy. And so, you know, I'm looking around and I'm going, okay, I know that you're going to take care of not even me. It wasn't so much about taking care of me. It was my purpose. Right. I had left this church. Things were blowing up. I was in my purpose. I mean, I ran from it for a long time. I stepped back into it. The Lord's blessing it. Now I feel like I'm out of it again. And now I'm looking around and I'm going, all right, God, you know, you've got my purpose in your hands. I realize that my purpose in life is completely and totally in your control. So I'm just going to do the best I can and let you make it happen. And so I taught that year. It was incredible. And then that summer, so that was 2023, the summer of 2023, this last church that I was at called me, asked me if I wanted to come in full time, offered a really good salary. I mean, they were paying a lot. It was two jobs. It was youth and recreation ministry. I mean, it was kind of exactly what I wanted to be in. And so I left the school. I took that job. And this is when I call it the silence of God. This is when the silence started, just almost completely shut off. I mean, I was still, you know, when I would go to study the word, I was still getting stuff out of it. And I never, you know, the Lord was always giving me things to preach and teach. But outside of that, I felt like the Lord had stopped talking to me. Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't figure out why. But I was, you know, our youth group was growing. I'm leading kids. We're doing mentorship groups with our youth group. I was doing chaplain work for our local wrestling team, two different lacrosse teams. I was at the high school or a couple of middle schools around the area almost every single day. I mean, I was working outside of the walls of the church all the time. And then the TikTok started to really take off as well. And so now I'm working full time for a church. I'm reaching kids in all kinds of different places, not just my youth room, but I mean, in a high school wrestling room, in a high school gym, in I mean, I would go to wrestling tournaments with the wrestling team and just meet somebody at the wrestling tournament, you know, three counties away. And all of a sudden they would see a hat I was wearing or something like that. We'd start talking about Jesus. I mean, that kind of stuff was happening all the time. And even with all that happening, I'm just feeling like the Lord has stopped talking to me. And so I'm still preaching, I'm still teaching, I'm still doing all this. The Lord's moving, he's working, I can see the work happening, and I'm getting nothing. And come to kind of realize, I still don't know why the Lord put us in this church. I know it's for a reason. And I know that the kids that we had, we still have communication with them. We still talk to them. We still love them. You know, I know that's part of it, but there's something that the Lord was doing during that time that I haven't figured out yet.
Yeah.
But I ended up, I started to see the ministry philosophy from this church. So one of the first things was I got in trouble for spending too much time with people who weren't members of our church. I got called into the office 3 days after my wife had gotten in a wreck with our two girls. She was 30 weeks pregnant. A Pepsi truck had hit her and then took off. And she was fine. I mean, everything was fine. But, you know, I'm dealing with getting the car fixed, getting her rental car, working with insurance. I get called into the office and I'm told, Josh, this is a hostile meeting. I'm upset with you. I was like, okay, what's happening?
Bro, that's the start of the meeting.
It's the start of the meeting.
Damn.
And that was what came out. It was, you're spending too much time with people who aren't members of our church. And really what it was a lot of the kids on the wrestling team, a lot of the kids on the lacrosse teams, things like that, were really never going to join our church. We were a little bit of an older church. There were some bigger, younger churches around us. You know, it just was, they were never going to end up joining our church. And so I was spending time with people who were never going to give money to what we were doing. And that was really the rub.
Damn.
So I didn't even say anything. I walked out of that meeting and I was floored. And so I started kind of making plans to pull back some of that other stuff I was doing, so that I could be what they called it was visible. So I could be visible in the church. Right. And I started doing that, and I'm just completely conflicted over it. You know, obviously these people are paying me. They're paying me to do something very specific, but at the same time, like I went into this to build the kingdom. I mean, my philosophy has always been, if I preach to a group of kids and a kid gets saved and then that kid goes and joins someone else's youth group, praise the Lord, right? If they're being discipled and it's not by me, I don't get to say that I'm the person who discipled that person, whatever. As long as they're getting Jesus, I mean, thank God I got to be a small part of it, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm feeling that. And finally, it was, we were in a meeting. We were talking about Vacation Bible School, and Vacation Bible School is like the Southern Baptist Super Bowl, right? I mean, it's, you know, it's just huge. We're talking about Vacation Bible School and registrations, getting people signed up. And we were asked to screen families when they register so that we weren't babysitting kids whose parents were members of other churches and would never join our church. And I walked out of that meeting.
Bro, stop playing with me.
I'm not, man. And I called my wife. Called my wife and I said, this is what I said. I said, babe, I don't think our, because we got three daughters, 5, 3, and about 12 weeks. She was, you know, brand new at the time. She hadn't been born yet. My wife was still pregnant. And so I called my wife and I said, babe, we gotta find a place to go. I said, our girls are not going to be spiritually healthy if we stay in this church. That was what I told her. And so my expectation was, the Lord was leading me out. He was going to give me a place to land. And that's not what happened. So I gave myself about 8 weeks, started setting up, trying to set up my plan to leave, finished up some of the things we were doing with our youth group, you know, tried to ease the pain for them of us leaving. We, you know, we announced it a couple weeks before we ended up actually leaving. But and through that whole process, man, the Lord didn't give us a place to go. And so I got to the end of it. I'm looking around and I'm going, God, I don't have a plan. I don't know how I'm going to make money. I don't know what I'm going to do. And silence, just complete and total silence. Still doing the TikTok stuff, still doing a lot of the chaplain stuff, still doing all these things. But just complete and total silence. And, I had a buddy reach out to me, offer me a construction job. That's where my hat's all concreted up and everything. So I committed to doing that, and still kind of expecting a church to reach out or, you know, something. And still nothing. And the time comes, we got to leave. Things start being said about us, coming from the leadership of the church. Man, I'm just broken. Man, I'm completely broken. Just complete vulnerability. I would say I'm still in that spot right now. Still doing construction. We are looking at a couple of different churches. There's a lead pastor position that I'm waiting to hear back on, in a church about 3 hours from where we live now. You know, I found out yesterday that the leadership of that church is telling people that we never got along with our students, that we took a better job, and that's why we left.
And you're slinging a sledgehammer.
Yeah. I'm running a jackhammer 8 hours a day, right down the road. And they know it. I told him when he left, he said, well, where are you going to go? I said, I don't know. I don't know where we're going, what the Lord's doing with us. I just know I need to leave. And so that kind of stuff is still coming up. And yet in the middle of all that, I'll just have somebody reach out to me that I don't even know from TikTok. And just say, man, your video today, I mean, it really helped what I was going through. I'll have somebody reach out to me, and I made a video actually just this afternoon. I'm going to respond to, I think it was, it's a deconstruction guy that the premise of his video is, evangelical Christians don't actually have friends. They don't like people. If an evangelical Christian wants to be your friend, it's because they want to pull you into their church. And so I'm going to respond to that. But I made the teaser to it. And immediately, I mean, people reaching out, yeah, we're friends. Like, you've been there for me. I've been there for you. I mean, constantly having people reach out and talk about what the Lord is doing. In and around and through me and my little family. And so I know the Lord's working, and he's showing me that he's working. And yet there's still silence. And in the midst of that silence, the only thing that I can say is that my faith in Christ, my desperation for Christ, is only getting stronger. It's only getting stronger. I don't know how. I don't know why. I'm not the one making it happen. But in the midst of the silence, in the midst of the struggle, in the midst of just feeling some days like, Lord, I don't want to be here, my faith is only getting stronger. And there's only one who could possibly do that. It's the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. There's no other worldview that could offer that for you. None.
No, no
question. I mean, there's nothing that can put you in the middle of just absolute brokenness and make you stronger for it. And so that's why, man, that's why I keep this. That's the only reason I keep doing what I'm doing, is because the Lord has really just given me one step at a time over the last 3 or 4 years. And basically, in the silence, the only thing that I've gotten from him is take the next step. I've already got the rest of them laid out. You don't have to worry about those. Take the next step. And it's, he hasn't let me down yet. And I don't think he's going to. So that's kind of where we're at right now. That's the position we're in.
Gosh. Okay. All right. A little backstory here. So I've been a cowhand for a long time. And the silence, I've learned countless lessons from old cowhands. Okay. And here's how they teach. They give you about this much.
Yeah.
And then they just sit there until you do good. And then they go, nice work.
Yeah.
And up until literally 2 days ago, you saying God speaking to you, zero relation to that in my entire walk of Christ for the last decade. Never once have I felt God without music. Music is the one exception. Have I felt God speak to me, quote unquote, right? Right. Pretty much the way I start every day is I get in my car with my coffee. I load my dog up and I put my Christian playlist on Magic Shuffle and I hit the play button. And right before I hit it, I say, God, you tell me what we're working on today. And whatever song comes on is God's word for the day. Right. But up until like during that fast, man, I was going to bed and the enemy was just annihilating me. Like thoughts of worthlessness. I just want to go home to glory. You know what I mean? Just like, please get me out of this effing spin cycle I live in. And it was after, man, what felt like an eternity is probably 15 minutes, you know, but what felt like an eternity of praying, I just felt God go, you are okay. You're fine. Okay. I love you. You're okay. And, but for years, man, I would be working with other cowhands and they'd say something. They'd be like, hey, slip over there and get that calf through the gate, you know, and they'd have something else to do. And you'd be over there. I'm talking praying for somebody to tell you what to do.
Yeah.
And nobody says nothing. You're just getting your ass whooped up and down the pasture. You can't catch them. You can't rope them. You can't get them out. You're just piled up. And you finally get the job done. And then you'd walk over to them and they'd be like, hey, next time, just be a little quieter. And then they walk off, you know? And that's all you'd get. You're like, what the heck does that mean, you know? And so the next time you try to be a little quieter, you know? And that's how I feel like a lot of my training has been with this is like, I started training myself biblically the same way you train a horse. So the way you train a horse is you give them a little puzzle and you reward the slightest try. And as soon as they get it, as soon as they understand what you're asking them to do, you quit and you go to something else. And it's to not frustrate the horse, right? If you give them too much at once, they get frustrated. And so for me, that's how I started reading the Bible years ago, is I would read until I actually understood something a little bit, and then I'd quit myself on it, and I'd go about my day. Here recently, it's been more of a gorging thing. Mm-hmm. But that's literally this week. But that quietness in an old guy, in an older guy, always was like, I looked at it as him letting me figure it out. Him not offering the answer before I learned the answer. because typically offered answers aren't listened to. You know what I'm saying? Like somebody will say, hey man, that's not going to be a good deal for you. And then you're like, you don't know, shot. Bam, yeah. right off the
cliff, there it is.
You know? And so those old cowboys, they don't offer wisdom just willy-nilly. They don't just say useless words. They don't say much of nothing, really. You're expected to watch and then learn from what they're doing. And then they might give you a little something. And then if you really make a wreck of stuff, they'll just cuss you out. But that's really interesting to me. My dad's a pretty quiet guy. And he's a cowboy too. And he basically taught me, most everything I know, but he's pretty, he'll let you bump your head, you know? I mean, and those natural consequences to your own actions are normally pretty good. And, I don't know if the quiet, while it might be foreign and feeling comfortable, it might just be part of the, your process as a believer. I don't know. Cause I look at it as like, there might be a sense of responsibility there that God's saying, hey man, I've trained you, do your freaking job. You know what the job is, freaking get after it. And fighting righteous sin, buddy, I don't want to be in your fight.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, right. Anybody that starts a conversation with me that this is going to be hostile, it's going to be real hostile. Yeah. We're going to freaking go to it, buddy. That's crazy. Like, okay, Millbrook, Alabama, Prattville, Alabama, the greater Montgomery area. Start applying to churches here because I'll come, buddy. And I don't go to church now. You hear me?
Like, yeah.
Because you're the kind of guy that I would follow. That conviction, somebody saying that to you and you going, man, I just can't be here. I just cannot do it. Like, I just refuse to subject my children to this. And I'm the same way, dude. I'm not doing it. I'm not sending my youngins in there for somebody to say something. Like, that's crazy to me. And not to poor mouth those folks, whatever. The king's working on them. And if they don't start listening, they're going to have some real trouble down the road. Paul is very clear. He's very clear about people who teach the word. That's why I say all the time, I'm not here teaching. I'm just walking the walk with you, buddy. I'm having a hard time.
Sometimes,
dadgummit.
Sometimes I say, don't put that on me. That's not.
Oh gosh, man. He is serious about what he says about people who run the church. And like that's their own burden to bear. But the fact of the matter is that the king is the king and the kingdom is the kingdom. And he's pretty dadgum clear about where we ought to be and what we ought to be doing. And salt and light of the world, to me, is not inside of a building.
No.
Oh, it just ain't, man.
It's not. It like I said, it needs to be a training place. And then the purpose of that training place is to take it outside. The majority of your work should not be done inside of a church. It should not.
No.
If you're leading a ministry, if you're part of a ministry, the majority of your time is spent in a church office, something's wrong. Something's broken.
Agreed.
And you see it. You see it so much. So much. This becomes our little haven. This is where the good people are. And our job is to make sure that those bad people out there get in here. No, our job,
that's crazy.
Our job is to make sure that you become better when you walk in here so that you can take what should be in here, which is the Holy Spirit out there. That's what it's meant to be. I'm going to change headphones here because one of them's getting low.
Yeah, I had to do that too.
But yeah, so that's kind of where we're at. And, you know, I think the Lord's kind of, there's a possibility. I think the Lord is leading me to kind of take what I'm doing with this 3-minute theologian thing, kind of full time. And we're I look at how mm-hmm. that might work. I think I may end up kind of moving to a different house, build myself a little studio, and just doing the online bit throughout the day, and then start publishing like some Bible study materials. I've written 4 books, and so I enjoy writing. So there's a kind of an epic poem kind of set up, almost John Milton style writing that I started and I haven't worked on in a little while. But that I would like to focus some time in on that. So really just be putting out content, through TikTok, through YouTube, running lives, doing some mentorships groups. I've got one going with a group of guys right now, that's kind of local, but maybe mm-hmm. expanding that a little bit. And then doing the publishing side, Bible studies, devotions, do that quick form publishing where you're putting stuff out every couple of weeks, focusing on the longer form publishing as well. Put out a couple of books that I've got kind of kicking in the background. And then maybe locally, just start sort of like a home church set up and allow that to grow and see what the Lord does with that. So that's an option that's out there. That is the no paycheck guaranteed option. So that's the financial faith option.
Yeah.
right. I think my headphones did fully die, but yeah, so that's kind of the option that I'm scared of right now. But I do think it's possible that the Lord might be taking us in that direction. So, mm-hmm.
Man, I get it, man. I get not knowing what to do and just fumbling around a little bit. Because honestly, dude, if you think about it, you said you got a 5-year-old.
Yeah, I got a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 12-week-old.
Yeah, if you think about yourself as a father, say I got a 6-year-old and a 2.5-year-old, and there's some times in their life that we allow the fumbling mm-hmm. because the fumbling teaches really well. I'm pretty big on natural consequences for my kids. Now I will snatch one up and whip that fanny if yep. need be, but I also love a good, hey, it's freaking balls cold outside and I don't want to wear my shoes. I love a All you right. bet moment
I've
there.
Done that.
Yeah. Go on ahead. Yep. Sure. And then in about 5 minutes, we're back inside getting shoes. And I think those lessons teach almost better than anything in the world. And I truly, there's a book I read when my son was, when my wife was pregnant with my firstborn, called Fathered by God by John mm-hmm. Eldridge. And yep. Dang it, That's son, that book there. I asked my granddad, he was a marriage and family counselor for like, I don't know, 40 years or something. It was when he passed, it was like my counselor died. It was terrible. And I'd give anything to talk to that guy for 5 yep. minutes. But I asked him one time, I said, granddad, man, this kid's coming and I got to turn him into a man. Like, what's the best book I can read? And he told me Fathered by God by John Eldridge. And you know, the initiation into manhood, it really changed my perspective on how I look at God as a father. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, noticing him fathering me in ways. And then it changed really pretty dramatically the way I look at my own father and then the way I decided to father my son. And so there's little moments like that where I'm literally battling the enemy in my own brain, but I'm watching my kids struggle on the monkey bars. And I'm like, I am that 6-year-old on the monkey bars. Like God is sitting up there going, I reckon you're going to get it yeah. figured out. You know, it's like, you just got to swing your hand over there, you know? And so it's almost this relationship I found with Christ has almost turned into this, like this unbelievable friendship of, I know he's up there just kind of giggling a little bit, like really enjoying me. You know, he's like, yeah, you're going to get it figured out. You know, like, I sure do appreciate you and I sure do love you. And I sure will spank you on the rear end if you're being a dink, but dadgummit, you're doing pretty good and I'm proud to be your daddy, you know? And gosh, I just, it's interesting to me, the realness of that moment I had this week, praying to God, as far as him speaking in a way that was like nothing I've felt before. Yeah. And that speaking sure made me, like him actually communicating in a way, man, it made that silence feel like a long time. And I have all the empathy in the world for you there, because it's just brutal. Like when you're just begging for an answer, it's like John Eldridge in the first part of that book, he talks about trying to fix his sprinkler. Yep. And he's just pissed because he's like, God, I should. So if someone was here to help me, we could do this in like 5 seconds. Or it's like soldering a wire or something, you know, something that's like, dude, you could YouTube that now and it'd be easy, you know? And he's just angry that there's no one there to help him. And that's what those moments of silence feel like, when really sometimes they can be the best.
Oh yeah.
The best teachers.
They really are. Well, man, I'm about an hour from home.
That's a story.
And I'm gonna go ahead and head towards the house. But I mean, I could sit here all day and talk.
Yeah, man, I love visiting with you, man. Thank you so much for coming on.
But I appreciate it. I mean, it's good to, it's nice to be able to tell a little bit of what the Lord's doing, because a lot of my stuff is behind the scenes, you know. And so it really is, it is good to, just be able to talk about, I mean, you know, the brokenness, the silence and all that stuff. But at the same time, the fact that, man, I'm convinced that there is nothing that could change. Just the fact that I might get mad at him, I might be upset with him sometimes, but the fact that I know for a fact that God is there. There's nothing that could change that knowledge at this point. I mean, I would have to be a fool to deny it. There just wouldn't be any way. So, like I said, I mean, even in the middle of what would normally, you know, break my confidence in anything else, my confidence is still growing, and I know for a fact that it's not me doing it. It's not my training. It's not my working out. It's the Lord doing the job. You know, finishing the work that he started, right? That's what he tells us he's going to do.
Yeah.
And I can promise, if there's one thing that I could say, it would be like Jacob, right? Alone at the edge of the water, wrestling with that angel. Just hang on. That's it. Sometimes it's the best we can do, is just grab him by the knees and say, you've broken my hip. You've completely... I'm exhausted. I can't even imagine. I wrestled in high school. I can't even imagine wrestling for my life all night, right? I'm just beat down and tired. I'm broken. You've already injured me, but I'm not letting you go until you bless me. And man, I mean, if you can get that grasp on faith, anybody who listens to this, if you can get that grasp on faith, that I may not know the answers, I may not know why, I may not know what's going on, I may not even be able to see 10 feet in front of me, but I'm just going to hang on to your knees and I'm not letting you go until you bless me. And I know you will. That is a greater faith to me than, you know, the guy on a pedestal preaching every Sunday.
No doubt. That's the suffering, dude. That's the suffering. Man, that. All right. We lost him. What an incredible episode, man. That's it. Oh, we're back, maybe. We're back. Hey, you there? Okay. I can't hear you. Maybe they can hear you.
Check one, two.
Oh, it was muted. Now say something. Huh. Recording stopped. Tell them to stop and restart the studio. Oh, you'd have to stop and restart. That's all right. We can outro it here. Let's see. We're still going. Okay. Looks like you're froze. I don't know if you lost service or if your phone's overheating. Oh, there we go.
Let me see. Is that working?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
All right. There we go. But that's the yeah, that's all I was saying. That's the main thing, man, is, you know, anybody who listens to this, if your faith just looks like hanging on and you don't know what else you're doing, be encouraged by that. Because so many of the saints in the Old Testament, the disciples in the New Testament, that's all they were doing. And that's exactly what Jesus asked us to do. You don't have to be, you don't have to be the next Billy Graham. You know, you don't have to be this giant guy on a pedestal. Your faith might not look like that. For every Billy Graham, for every you know, for every Abraham, for every hero of the faith that we look at, there's 100,000 other people that are following Jesus and being faithful in it, and nobody ever sees them. But the Lord does, and that's what matters.
Man,
But I
what a great episode, Josh.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I loved it. Like I said, man, I could sit here all day and do stuff like this. I think it's an incredible idea, incredible podcast. Just dudes sitting around talking about Jesus. A lot of good things have happened throughout history just from that happening.
Facts.
I love it, man.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate it. And we'll have to have you back on when you drop a book, dude. Let me know.
We'll definitely do that sometime.
That'd be awesome. All right, guys. Y'all look Josh Howard up on TikTok. As always, if you need me, Dalton@310EDU, reach out. If you want to come on the podcast, let me know. If you want to support it, theartofsufferingpodcast.com. Guys, thank y'all so much for watching. We love you. And we'll see you in the next episode.